This is a CBC original podcast.
We get to our dorm, and we hear some noise. I thought it was fireworks. We walk out to the balcony, look around. We don't see anything. We don't see anybody. And then it happens again. And I respond to George going, "Who in the world is setting off fireworks in the middle of the night when all these athletes still have to compete at the Olympic Games?" We went to bed, only to realize when we woke up in the morning, those were shots. Shots of the worst terrorist attack that has ever happened at the Olympic Games.
One of the terrorists came out on the balcony with the gun in his hand, and it was just then that the reality of it really struck me. Here was this man with the hood over his face standing there. I thought to myself, what am I doing here?
But let me start at the beginning.
Munich, 1972, a tragedy that will likely be marked for every Olympic Games to come.
I'm Byron McDonald, and this is Backstory, the Munich Summer Olympics, 1972. I was incredibly excited going to Munich. I mean, this was the biggest show in the world.
Against the background of a cloud-flecked blue Bavarian sky and under a fantastic web of steel and plastic, the 20th Summer Games are spectacularly underway in Munich, Germany.
I had made the Olympic Games in two events, the 200-meter butterfly and the 100-meter butterfly, which was definitely my better event. It was very, very exciting and something that you realize this is where it was all going to happen, and you were quite pleased to be there, and I certainly was.
And a long way from home, the Canadian, but looking very much a part of this scene, even though they are far from home.
The Olympic Village is a gigantic little mini-city. I mean, there are about 10,000 athletes. It's exciting for athletes that are at their first international games, like I was, to see all these different people from all over the world. It's a real mix of different kinds of people, and it's every day you see all these different kinds of people and cultures and clothing.
Here in Munich, Germany, the 1972 Summer Olympics are officially opened in a blaze of color, sound, and excitement.
In hindsight, the interesting part about the security at the Olympic Games in 1972 was it's nothing like what it is today. Yes, there were fences, and yes, there were guards, but the security here was somewhat lax. There had never been any problems before. People weren't trying to rush into the village. Everybody was very respectful that the athletes are the athletes and you should leave them alone. There were no media people trying to sneak in and get exclusive stories. And so there was no need for gigantic security as far as I could tell. I took my father. My father came and visited me at the Olympic Games. He said, "Wow, what's the village like?" And I said, "Let's see if we can sneak you in." And I put my Canada track jersey on the back of him. He's wearing a full suit and tie. Doesn't exactly look like an athlete because he's, you know, a little older. We walked right through. There was not an issue, not a question. And then I was able to show him the village. So there was never really an issue about security at all until the terrorist acts. On the morning of September 5th, that was also the second game of the infamous Canada-Russia Hockey Summit Series.
"Hello, Canada. I'm Foster Hewitt, and I'm honored to have the privilege of again bringing you to the play-by-play."
Canada and Russia had gotten the satellite feed to the IBC, which is the broadcast center, which was about a kilometer, maybe 2 kilometers from the athletes' village. And the Canadians and the Russians that were keen on hockey, myself included, went over and watched it. The game was in Toronto, so broadcast that all the way over to Germany. You're talking about a 5-hour time change. Means it was 1 in the morning or 2 in the morning. So we're watching the game. The game ends then at 3, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning.
"And the game is over. And Canada has evened the series 4-1.
And we walk back to the village. It's about a kilometer, 2 kilometers. So coming back after watching that hockey game in the middle of the night to the Olympic Village, we get to the back gate and it's locked and there's nobody there. It's unmanned. So now we've got a real dilemma. We've got this 9-foot-high fence, a Canadian dorm. I can see it. It's right there. And there's 4 of us and we're trying to figure out what we're going to do. And then we look over and we see four other guys about 50 meters down the fence. They're obviously, in our mind, confronted with the same dilemma. They want to get to their dorm through the back gate, but there's nobody there to allow us in. So they're standing there in their sort of mauve, off-color, off-red, purplish uniforms. But I did, at that moment, look over and realize it's a bit weird because they didn't have their country names on it. Everybody's so proud about wearing their jerseys that say Canada on the back or United States or Kenya or whatever it is. And yet these guys didn't have anything written on the back of their jerseys, which I thought was a bit odd. So then those guys all hopped the fence. Once they hopped the fence, we figured, well, what the heck? If they can do it, we can do it. Not the easiest thing to do, by the way. This is a 9-foot-high chain link fence with a little bit of barbed wire on the top. So we were able to sort of help each other get to the top and hop over. There were four of us. And make our way to the dorm. Shortly after we arrive in the dorm, we hear sounds. Thinking it's fireworks, we go out on the balcony, look around, can't see anybody, anything. Again, this is 4:30 in the morning. It's pretty dark out. Go back to our dorms, fall asleep. And of course, those sounds were actually gunshots. The terrorists had attacked the Israeli dorms.
What happened after you got in when you went to your rooms?
Well, we were in our rooms about 5 or 10 minutes, and we were sitting around talking with all the guys, and all of a sudden we heard this really loud noise, which we were just sort of joking around. We thought it was a gunshot, and one of the guys mentioned it sounded like a firecracker.
Is that what it sounded like to you?
Yeah, it sounded like a firecracker, but one fellow said it was a gun, but we didn't believe him. But I guess it was.
Terror at the Olympic Games. An Arab vengeance squad shoots its way into the Israeli quarters of Olympic Village, killing two and capturing 9 hostages.
I'm not so sure the magnitude of the problem hit everybody right away.
Well, we never expected to encounter at the Olympics, and the close quarters we were at allowed us to see many things that I'm sure others would have missed.
Jack, you were the son taking part in the games. Did you have any other thoughts on it?
None whatever. I had no worries at all about Canadian athletes.
You do have these terrorists right next to the Canadian dorm. And we were not ushered out in an emergency fashion. We were allowed to stay in the dorm, which in hindsight, you kind of wonder if that was safe, especially because the terrorists could have ventured outside of the dorm they were in, and we were sort of next in line. But we were told simply to stay in our rooms. It didn't really impact any of us that we should be afraid. I never felt any fear. The one part that was surreal is that there were tanks and soldiers moving forward. And it was surreal. It was like, really? There's tanks? You've got all these soldiers? I mean, yes, I understand there's an issue going on, but you didn't really realize the magnitude of it. Nobody really explained it to us that this is an incredibly, incredibly dangerous and scary situation. And I felt like any minute somebody was going to yell, cut, and that's the end of that. Printed, it's a movie. There's nothing really going on here. There's nothing to be afraid of, because it just was something that was so beyond comprehension that was happening right in front of us here in the Olympic Village.
First part of it, it wasn't, you didn't really think about how bad it really was. And then gradually, as the day wore on, it really started to sink in, and by about 9 o'clock at night, your nerves are just shot.
So after the initial hostage-taking at the Israeli dorm,
terrorists came out, the leader of the group, all by himself. He looked the bus over. Then they took the hostages down with their hands tied in front of them.
The athletes were taken out to the airport with the terrorists.
Put them into the bus, and along with 4 or 5 others, all armed with weapons, they took off for the helicopter base, which was about 1/4 mile down the road.
The plan, at least from the terrorist standpoint, was to get on board a flight and fly away with the hostages. That, of course,
I just have now been handed a report, unconfirmed,
all went down the toilet,
that there were shots heard at the airport. That is it.
A day of murder and terror at the Olympics in Munich is over, and it's ended with tragedy and shock. All 8 Israeli hostages held by a squad of Arab commandos are dead. They were killed by the terrorists at a military airport when police sharpshooters opened fire.
At daybreak, the airfield was almost deserted. There are still conflicting reports of just what happened. Again tonight, the situation was clouded when a police spokesman insisted police did not fire first.
It was really difficult to comprehend. Initially, you get that suck in your breath and your heart pauses for that moment because you can't believe that that actually has transpired. Those kind of things don't happen. People don't just have a terrorist attack and then all of a sudden wipe out an entire group of people. It just was incomprehensible. And because you don't have the experience to deal with an event of this magnitude, it's so new that there's no way for you to really fathom what has just happened. And so after sort of that momentary pause, you kind of just go on with what you're doing. And I think I went and met up with some friends. And that was, your life kind of goes on. And then only later do you kind of put two and two together and realize the magnitude of what has just happened.
The Munich Philharmonic Orchestra and the Olympic flag at half staff in tribute this morning to the 11 Israeli team members killed by Arab guerrillas. In the audience, members of the Israeli community here visibly moved by the events at the 20th Olympiad.
Since competing in Munich in 1972, I've been to virtually every single Olympic Games after that, mostly as a media broadcaster, and the difference is incredible on the level of security. It is very, very difficult now to access getting into the village. Just to even, if you wanted to bring somebody in, there has to be clearance 24, 48 hours. Sometimes they won't even clear anybody if they're not an athlete. The amount of security that's around the village. I know in Los Angeles, the best example I can give is that right next to the Olympic swimming pool was a square building, 10, maybe 15 stories tall. There was a sharpshooter on every single corner, 24 hours a day. And their rifles were, they were pointing their rifles. They weren't standing there looking. They were pointing their rifles and scanning 24 hours a day. And that was how tight security was then in 1984 because of the 72 Olympics, and that's how tight it is today.
When they took the Israelis out in the last few moments there and put them on the bus, did you have any special reaction?
Yes, I just had a terrible feeling of foreboding that this was the last we'd ever see of them, and I'm afraid that was correct.
I never felt any fear at all, and I think that's simply because you have an ignorance of what's going on. We'd never experienced anything like that. I'd certainly never experienced anything. The Olympic movement had never experienced anything like that. So it was never really, I was never afraid. And yet, in hindsight, I probably really should have been. Backstory is recorded and produced by Cecil Fernandez. For more behind-the-scenes stories, visit cbc.ca/backstory or subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. I'm Byron McDonald.
For more CBC original podcasts, go to cbc.ca/originalpodcasts.